Hey everyone, Adam D. from In Defense of Ska here. A little note before we start the show. Los Angeles is dealing with multiple catastrophic fires. A lot of people have lost their homes and are in need. If you're able to help, please do so. There are a lot of great organizations you can donate to, like California Fire Foundation, Pasadena Humane Society, Mutual Aid LA, and there's even a list of people in the music industry that have lost their homes. Links are in the show notes for our Rob Harvilla episode. Thanks.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Consequence Podcast Network. Welcome to In Defense of Ska. We aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of the music. Ska deserves the respect genres like punk, hip-hop, and hardcore find among their listeners. Our host is renowned music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska, Aaron Carnes.
Today we take an in-depth look at the Native Nation's punk and ska scenes in the Southwest. To do that, we're bringing on Jordan Steele from the ska punk band Low Cash Ninjas.
Yo, yo. First things first, we ain't cop killing. We're ghost busting up a piece of pill. Villains want to fight the land. A lot of wise to stay chillin'. We're stuck the land back and rinse it and never won.
The group formed in the late 2000s in Shiprock, New Mexico, also with roots in Chinle, Arizona. They play a particularly heavy, aggressive version of ska punk, often referred to as crack rock steady. The group is one of the biggest and best known ska and punk bands from the Southwest Native Nations. They've also toured a fair amount throughout the U.S. Jordan explains how this scene developed, what's unique and important to the bands and fans in it, and we get a sense of Low Cash Ninja's place in it all. And now joining me is veteran ska musician Adam Davis from the bands Omnigon, but also Link 80.
So we've talked about this before on the show, but Link 80 played in Tuba City on tour two different times at a place called The Crack Shack.
The Crack Shack.
Yeah, those shows were pretty amazing. And I was kind of amazed that bands like Falling Sickness and The Slackers were playing that same space.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you're going to play in the Southwest and hit towns besides Phoenix and Albuquerque, these are totally viable touring spots, right?
Totally. I mean, I thought those shows were great. They were definitely a little more on the punk side than some of the spots we would play. But I really enjoyed myself. I really enjoyed the energy that the crowd brought. Mm-hmm. Now, this is the first crack rock steady band we've really covered, right?
Yeah, I mean, we don't go too in-depth about that specific subgenre of ska, but it did occur to me as I was getting ready to put this episode out that this is a subgenre of ska that I don't believe, other than the fact that we did a Leftover Cracked episode with Brad Logan and John Gentile when they released their book. Other than that, I don't think we've really talked about it.
Yeah, definitely go back and check out the episode with Brad Logan and John Gentile and our episode with Alex
Begay. Yeah.
That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the more we dig into these stories of ska bands all over the world, the more we understand about different cultures and subcultures around us.
I want to connect to an older episode we did. One of our first episodes for this podcast, we had Alex Begay from Tuba City, who book shows at the Crack Shack, came on. And you're aware of that scene, right? I know that wasn't your scene, but you're aware of that scene, right?
Yeah, for sure.
What do you know about the Crack Shack scene?
Yeah. So like the Crack Shack scene was like late 90s, and I was maybe six or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, when that was happening. But I hear a lot about it and stuff like that from like the older crowd, you know. But that was when I was younger. I was getting to the scene as a teenager, hearing a lot about the Crack Shack, and then like I was hearing about all these like great scenes throughout the res, because I was living in Shiprock at the time and I was playing punk rock and was one of the only punk ska bands in the area. So once I found out about like, you know, other like scenes throughout our reservation, because our reservation is pretty big. It's about the size of West Virginia. So I was like, okay, cool. I'm gonna check out these scenes. And the one that always comes to mind is Tuba City. That's one of the few, one of the main places mentioned. And they talk about all these bands that came through, like The Spike is a Pike Bomb. What is it? The Slackers, you know, just a bunch of really good bands came through in the 90s. And so I was like, man, this is cool. And then I started to get in touch with these people and they start doing like a lot of shows. And there were some really good bands that were coming from that area. But a lot of them, you know, were very short lived. But Alex's band Downplay was like, you know, one of the bands that's been around since, I don't know, like the early 2000s, late 90s. And they're still around right now, too, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. So Downplay, what do they sound like?
So Downplay, I feel like it's kind of like a rancid sounding band with a lot of bouncing souls, like kind of, you know, riffs in there. They started out ska, like third wave ska. Then they shifted over to just like, you know, punk rock and not like hardcore punk rock, but really poppy old, like, you know, 90s punk, like punk rock, which is really cool. Like I see a lot of influence of Green Day. I see a lot of influence of like a lot of like, you know, that bouncing soul style.
You know whose band played Crack Shack is sorry co-host here, Adam Davis. His band Link 80 played there twice.
Oh, okay.
I got to play there with Downplay, and they, I got kind of like a early AFI vibe from them. Like that was,
oh sick.
That was kind of what I thought when I saw them. But I mean, also I was just kind of blown away by those shows when we showed up, like they just packed out. Like it was like every single kid who lived in that area rolled out. And then the most interesting thing was I was sitting there with this girl and she was just pointing out like, oh yeah, that's my cousin over there. And I'm in the same tribe as that person. And oh yeah, that's my best friend. And I thought that was really cool. I was wondering if you could speak to that at all.
Oh yeah, for sure. Back then, you know, like back in like the MySpace days, like whenever there was a show, like we tried to all kind of organize, like, okay, if you're doing a show, I'll wait till next week to do a show. And that's how we kind of like figured it out, because like whenever there was a show, everyone in the whole reservation would try to their best to hit that show. All the punk rockers would go to this show. And if there was another show, it was probably like a metal show or a hip hop show. And all those other people would go to that show. And it would be like people coming from across like two states or a whole state, you know, just to come watch, you know, like their bands, like their friends, they're like, I guess how would I put it? Like the local scene was a bunch of punk bands and they all played one show and it was a really good show and people came from all over. And so there was a lot of like relatives in that area too. And I think with like Navajo culture, like everyone's like kind of like, we have like, we try to establish like which is like relations with one another. So we all have like four clans, right? And then if our four clans, one of them's related through one of the lineages of maybe our mom or grandfather, then we can say, oh, that's my cousin brother, or that's my actual brother, or that's my grandpa, you know. But if they're not related, you know, then that's when we're like, okay, hey, maybe we could date, you know. It's kind of like an old, like old way to kind of keep people from, you know, doing, committing incest back in, you know, back in the day.
For sure.
Yeah.
And then these shows back in the day, what were those, where were these at? What were they like?
So they were in chapter houses, which was kind of like our local governing, kind of like government buildings. They would like rent it out to like, you know, a bunch of kids for super cheap, and the kids would throw massive punk shows in there. I remember like we saw Subhumans there one time. They would throw them in backyards. They would throw them in like little, like they even, we even had a couple of them inside these like little traditional homes called Hogans. I don't know if you guys see one of the Hogan. It's like an eight-sided house. It always east, you know, and that's like our traditional like home that we lived in as kids, or not like, not as kids, but you know, as like, you know, Navajo people. And so we throw like punk shows in there, and it was a thing too, like whenever you enter a punk, or not punk, but a Hogan, you would have to enter clockwise and you gotta go clockwise to leave. So whenever there was a pit, it always had to go clockwise, which was pretty cool.
That kind of works out.
Mm-hmm. I was looking at a map, so Tuba City is in like kind of north central Arizona. And it's a Navajo city, right? And then you're over on Shiprock in New Mexico, North New Mexico. That's also Navajo, but there's a whole like Hopi reservation in between, right?
Yeah. So Tuba City is basically Western Agency. Shiprock is Northern Agency. And then there's different agencies throughout the whole res. And it's kind of like how the res is kind of broken up. And then kind of like a little towards Tuba is the Hopi tribe. And yeah, the Hopi tribe is kind of like, that reservation is a little bit smaller, but it's within Navajo Nation though.
Okay. Yeah. So I heard, you know, Alex said that the Slackers played Crack Shack a few times, and he gave us a little detail I thought was funny. He's just like, oh yeah, I just remember Vic sitting there eating a Nabo taco, which like always, like, I just thought that's just the coolest thing. But can you tell people what a Nabo taco is?
Okay, so Nabo taco is the base of it. It's kind of like fry bread, and fry bread, it's like it's almost like soul food for, you know, Navajos. It's kind of like, or actually for a lot of tribes, you know what I mean? It's like this like flour that's like, you know, fried in oil, you know, grease, and it makes this nice little like bread. It looks like a sopapilla. And then they put a beef on there with beef and beans, and then they put lettuce like a taco, and then they put tomatoes, cheese, and whatever else you want to put on there.
I've had Nabo tacos a few times from food trucks, you know, just around California, and they've always been like the size of a plate. Is that typical for a Nabo taco?
Yeah, it's usually the size of a plate. Sometimes people have certain ways of like cooking it and making it. So with me, I'll like shred up all the bread and put it in, and then finally put the stuff on so I can eat it with the fork. Some people just do the whole hot, like, you know, not like hot, like, but like a taco, and just eat it like that.
I'm curious if you're aware of this. In the 80s, so there was a ska band from Boston called Bim Skala Bim. They started in like early 80s, and they played Tuba City in like mid 80s or something like that. And they loved it so much that they named their second album Tuba City.
That's so sick.
So I'm curious if you've ever heard that, because I mentioned that to Alex and he kind of heard something, but it wasn't really familiar with it. It was like almost this whole separate thing.
Yeah, I didn't hear that, but for a ska band, that makes sense. Tuba City, you know what I mean? That's pretty cool. Yeah, I'm always learning these things, like how these like different bands came through, you know what I mean? These like different like famous people pulled up to the res and stuff like that. Like that's always awesome to hear about that. And Link 80, which is crazy. We would see all these like old, like OG, like punk rockers with their like Telecasters, and there's like a Link 80 sticker on there. I'm like, and we look at the band, like, damn, that band is sick. That's so cool. Like, and then later on, the guy would be like, oh yeah, they played it on the res. And I would even question him, like, oh, I believe you, you know? Like, yeah.
Yeah. The first time we sketched out Alex really bad because we had a booking agent, and, you know, he would be like, oh, you know, let us know what you can do as far as like housing or, you know, the guarantee or whatever. And I think Alex took that as you have to get us a hotel room, which was not the case. Like, we were the type of band that would definitely sleep on a floor. And so the first time we showed up to the Crack Shack, it was just locked down, and we had to like call a bunch of people and like find him. And he was, and he had like skipped town, but he was like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, I misunderstood. Like, I'll send one of my friends over and he'll unlock the place. You guys can still play. And like, it still ended up being a sick show. And then once he knew that we were like down, like we came back again, and the second time was off the chain. It was insane.
That's so cool. He's done so much for the scene, like way back then. And I feel like he's really humble. You know, he doesn't like want to take a lot of credit. He's just like, oh yeah, yeah. And you know, that's, I remember that. You know, and I was like, I always hear this like rumor that like, it was like a, I guess like a myth, like, you know, Downplay was going to get signed by this big label. And I believed that as a kid. I'm like, they should have, man. They were so good back then.
They were good. Yeah.
And did he run like a record studio, or not a record, like recording studio, 320 Records?
Yeah. He had a bunch of good bands from the scene on that. He had this really cool, like all female punk band called The Chizzies, and he did a little bit of their drumming, but The Chizzies, man, they had so many good songs that, and oh my gosh, I wish like a lot of the stuff was lost in MySpace. You know how like a lot of songs are uploaded and you can't hear them anymore.
So,
yeah, that's one. They had some of their songs in there, but they're slowly making a comeback. You can see, you can probably hear some of their music on YouTube. It's really good, like, you know, like nice, like, you know, just good punk rock. There's another band called Child Left Behind, and that band was really big on the res back then in the early 2000s. Like, they were playing everywhere. They had like, they, Alex basically got that band going. They started as Discarded Youth, and then they turned into Child Left Behind. And then they traveled quite a bit all over the res, and everyone knew their songs. They had a bunch of hits, and they slowly started to die out, but they made their comeback, I think just like maybe a year ago, but it's not as, you know, they're still trying to work their way, you know, being older and everything.
Sure.
Yeah. You talk about Alex being modest. He never brought that up during our interview that he recorded all these bands, which is wild. Like, that's such an important or interesting thing to bring up in an interview, but no.
Well, and an important thing just to have a record of it.
Yeah.
And he works really hard. He went to school for, like, you know, like sound and recording and stuff like that. So he really knows what he's doing. And he's always like, oh man, this sounds great. Oh, check out this band, you know? And then he's always like trying to push these other bands. But I think now he's just trying to really work on his band. And he's also working on, I think his son has become a member of Lyric. And Lyric, I think he's like 12 years old or 10 years old. And he's this little kid and he's playing in Downplay now and he's singing too. And it's so sick. And I was like, bro, I remember this little kid was so scared of me when I came over to your house. Now he's all like up there rocking. He's not even shy or anything. He's just really
mad. That's sick.
Are you familiar with the history of how punk bands started to come through the reservations? Like I had read a little bit that like in the 90s, bands like Offspring and Vandals and some of these like bands from that era were coming through and playing in like the Flagstaff area.
Yeah, there's been this whole like thing of like, you know, especially like metal music is really big on the res, but like just like bands would come through and they always give like, you know, before like a land acknowledgement, they would say that, you know, but they would just always give shouts like, oh, shout out to all the Navajos or the Hopis or all the tribes, you know, here and there, you know, thank you for coming out. You know, I would always hear that at the shows and stuff like that. There's actually a funny story. Danzig was supposed to play I think in Tuba City one time. I don't know if Alex mentioned this. But this band called Northside Kings from Phoenix opened up, or they were supposed to open up, but Danzig wanted to play first, Glenn, and he was getting all upset. And there's an altercation. You can look it up on YouTube. And I don't know if you see the video where like Danzig, Glenn gets like knocked out by that. But yeah, that happened on the reservation inside one of the high schools. It was supposed to happen. Everyone always makes fun of it. So there's a lot of Misfits fans, but everyone, like all the OGs are always like, oh, do you know he got his ass knocked out here? And yeah, I didn't believe for the longest time, but yeah, it did happen.
Yeah, I've seen it. It is legendary. I mean, to your knowledge, like it was like these bands were coming through and then at some point, I don't know if it was Crack Shack, but some like a scene, like a more of a local scene started to develop.
Yeah. Yeah. So like a lot of the local scenes started like in from what I can remember, it was Tuba City and then it was Winder Rock. Well, those were like the main two places it started. And Tuba City is closer to Flagstaff. Winder Rock's closer to like Gallup. And Gallup's like off-res. It's along the both of them are along the I-40. And Gallup had this like band called Third Degree. And they were one like the first punk bands in that area. And then Downplay was the first band. Like one of the first bands in there. There's this one a long time ago. I can't remember. It was in Flagstaff before them. But there's this band that also popped up deeper in the res. Not a little bit closer to the city called Blackfire, and they're one of the bigger bands that kind of blew up and went all over the place. You know, they've been all over country, and like they worked with one of the Ramones guys. I can't remember his name, but yeah, it was really cool, and they got to travel quite a bit. But those are some of like the two areas I know that got a lot of like traffic. But a lot of times it was like a lot of like, you know, like Navajos and, you know, I guess indigenous people going to the city and starting bands and stuff like that. That's what I heard.
In Defense of Ska will return in a moment.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So let's talk about you for a little bit. You are from Shiprock, right? We've already established that.
I'm from East Nosbus, Arizona, but I grew up in Shiprock.
Gotcha. Okay. When you started getting into punk rock and shows, you were in Shiprock?
Yeah, I was in Shiprock. It's funny you mentioned AFI. AFI was like one of the first like punk bands I heard, you know, as a kid. Like I grew up in this like neighborhood on the north side of Shiprock. It was like a bunch of just like Crips, you know, running that whole neighborhood. But a lot of the little brothers of the Crips were like into skateboarding, and I was into skateboarding. And then they were like showing me like really cool music. And I was like, man, this is really cool. What is this? And like, oh, this is AFI. And it was like the, what is it? Black Sails in the Sunset. And I was like, man, yeah, this is really good. This is actually like real, real punk. Cause like other stuff like Blink-182 and like Green Day, I was like, man, this is okay. You know, there's gotta be something better than this, you know?
And you won a third place in a skating competition as well, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember that, yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Well, tell us about it. Let's hear about your big win.
Okay, so I was it's funny. Third Degree, that punk band, they were playing that skate competition in Wonder Rock. Can't remember, it was early 2000s. They invited us out to go, or I got invited out to the skate comp. Like, man, I'm not even that good, but like I had a certain way of skating, you know. Like res kids all have a certain style of skating because we don't have a lot of like, you know, street ramps and everything like that. So we're always like, you know, doing our best to make things work. We skate the most rugged things ever, you know what I mean? But once you get us on concrete, it's smooth, man. We just kill it. You know, we're so good. It's like, oh man, this is smooth. The ground's smooth. It's not so rough. So we got it there. We got to the park and it's like this makeshift park they put together. I'm like, oh, I'm already like, you know, putting together like my course, how I'm gonna run this. It's like, all right, cool. And I was pretty good at, you know, certain things. So did the comp and it was funny. The whole time I'm skating, there's the Third Degree, and I was like one of the first punk bands in Wonder Rock they're playing. And after them, there's this rockabilly band that it's been around forever too. They're called SOL, Shit Out of Luck, and they were playing, and that just got everyone hyped. And they're like, man, this is so good. And I ended up winning the third place, even though like I went for big tricks, and I landed maybe like out of like the 10 big tricks, I landed like maybe five of them, half of them, and I was like, ah, I'm not gonna win anything. It's cool. And then sure enough, they called me up for third place. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I was like probably like 14 years old. I was really young, 13, yeah.
What's a trick that you landed?
It was off the kicker, off it was like one of those pyramids like this. I went off to the side, did a hard flip, caught it pretty good, and just brought it down smooth. Hard flip was like my jam. And then another really good one was I 360 boneless the whole pyramid all the way and like landed like with my knees bent and just cruised it down. Like, you know what I mean? It was so sick. And then I did this 50-50 the whole ledge. Like you pop up the pyramid, you hit the ledge all the way down. Yeah, that was one of the things I did. It was pretty cool.
Sick.
Nice. So metal was more popular or more common back in those days when you were young and getting into punk rock.
Yeah, it was very popular in the Shiprock scene. There's like so many metal shows. They would host them like every other weekend. I remember all these bands like Sacred Blood, Horny Toads, God, there's so many like Try This, all these big metal bands. And there's this like it's always kind of been big in like Native American culture, like or not culture, but like just the scene is just like there's so many metal bands, and it's just like everyone's just like the long hair, the headbanging. And I was like, man, this is cool, but it's like I grew up on this stuff, you know. Like my mom would took she took me to Ozfest quite a bit as a kid. So I was like, oh, this is cool, but like I need something more. But it's always been there, you know what I mean? And so to be the only like punk and also like punk ska band in Shiprock, we really stood out. We didn't really have a crowd, but after a while we developed a crowd. And then we started to make those connections on MySpace, like I said, and then we started to venture out into these other places, like deeper in the res, and yeah, like Tuba City.
How old were you when your mom took you to Ozfest for the first time?
Oh my, well, my first concert was Rob Zombie. I think I was like 7 years old.
Damn.
It was Rob Zombie, and then it was The Damn. I later found out it was The Damn, which was pretty sick.
That's sick. What did you think? What did your 7-year-old brain think of that show?
It was crazy. I remember The Damn guy. He was like he someone threw a tissue at the singer from The Damn, and then I was on my mom's shoulder, and then I could see pretty well, and like he like got this tissue, he like wiped his ass and he threw it back into the crowd. I was just like, I saw that thing fly. I was like, man, that was so cool. Like I was like, that was lit. It's like that was amazing. And then there was like girls flashing, you know, of course Rob Zombie's like set, and I was just like, and my mom was just like, cover your eyes. I'm like, all right, bro. Like low key looking though, like you know what I mean. But yeah, and then I go to work, or she made sure like we got back that night. She took me to school the morning. I remember coming to school with this oversized Rob Zombie shirt. It was really suggestive and rowdy. I didn't get dress coded till like the end of the day, and then but yeah, it was pretty cool. And then I think when I was like 10 years old, we went to Ozfest, then we went to Family Values, and then we went to like a few more shows. Like she was really into like metal music.
That's cool.
Yeah, I was going to ask, when you say metal is really big, do you mean like Sabbath and Ozzy and like that kind of metal, or is it all kinds of metal? Was thrash big? Was
Yeah, like Napalm Death, stuff like that. That was real big, kind of like that style of like thrash was really big on, and that also a little bit of like nu metal was kind of popular when I was like starting to get into the scene. And then the whole breakdowns, what is it, the Black Dahlia Murder stuff, you know, that stuff started to get popular. And then the emo stuff got popular, and then that was just kind of like the trends, you know. And then finally, you know, we started to see a little bit more hardcore. You know, we started to see some more I guess there was like a reemergence of pop punk, you know what I mean? And then it went back into just like different waves of trends, you know. I saw like bands coming and going through Shiprock, you know, with just different sounds.
yeah.
I read an interview where you talked about going to a metal show that was at a sheep corral.
Yeah. So I remember I opened up my head at that place. It wasn't too bad. It was just like, oh, it wasn't too bad. But I remember like, oh, there's a metal show is happening during one of our fairs, and my skater friend's like, let's go check it out. I was like, we don't got any money. I was like, well, we'll just stand around. Maybe we'll get in for free. Sure enough, we got in for free. It was like a stage that was like by a like a sheep corral, or like a cow, like a cattle corral, or I think a sheep corral. I couldn't remember. Everyone was rocking out. And there was a lot of people, and I was just like, man, this is pretty cool. And we started getting the pit, and we were having a lot of fun. And somehow I hit my head on one of those little like pole things, the blood. And I was like, but after it stopped bleeding, I was like, oh, I'm good. You know what I mean? And yeah, it was like a lot of fun. You know, that's the kind of like music we saw. And after a while, I was like, man, this is kind of cool. Like playing in bands might be a cool thing to do.
Yeah. So your first band was Obama Loves Mutton.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you guys played a high school talent show, right?
Yeah, we did. It was my girlfriend at the time. She was like, oh, I really want to play this. She played it last year. She did this cool like Casualties, like, well, they're not cool anymore, but she did this Casualties like cover with her friend on acoustic, and it was such a big deal. Everyone loved it. I loved it. Then that, or I think it was our senior year, she's like, I want to do this, let's play as a full band. I'm like, oh man, I'll give it a try, because I could play guitar, but I wasn't nowhere as like as good as her. But she insisted on playing bass. I was like, okay. It's like, you got to sing though. She's like, you got to help me. It's like, okay. And then we start to kind of like, maybe we should play a full band. I was like, you think we could pull it off? It's like, okay. So I started to kind of recruit people here and there. I got like the metal kids to kind of help out. I got another guitarist that was a metal kid. I got another drummer that was a metal kid. And I was like, okay, we're all pieced together. And then I was like, let's practice. We all kind of practiced the song. It was that Leftover Cracks on Vias and Dios. So we're like, okay, let's practice it, the part, and we'll bring it all together. And we practice in the band room at the high school. And then like, I remember just playing it for like the first like 30. Wow, that was us. I was like, this is so cool. Let's keep doing it. So we did it. We got it down like really quick. We did the talent show, and then we were supposed to play in the beginning. I was like, okay, cool, let's get it over with, man. Like, you know, sick. I don't have to worry about playing like towards the end. But sure enough, they're like, oh, because of like, you know, the setup, we're gonna have you play second to last with the other big teacher band. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, all right. And there's all these great talents before us. So I'm like, I think we're gonna suck. And all these kind of things start to kind of happen that kind of like, you know, like, oh, my pick broke. Oh, I can't find a pick. My cord's not working. And the biggest thing that sucked is like, by the time we got up there, her cord to her bass guitar was not long enough for her to reach the mic. And it was like, they're already telling us to go. And I was just like, oh my God, I have to sing this thing. And I was like, all right. And I was like, 'cause it would have sounded sick if we both sang, like switching off on chorus or switching off on verses. But I ended up singing the whole thing. And I just remember doing that. And then I couldn't even really see the crowd because it was so bright. And then I just remember after we got them playing, like it just erupted. And I was like, man, that was pretty crazy. That was wild. I can't believe I did that. And then after a while, I was like, man, maybe I do want to play in a band.
You said that there was a teacher band. What kind of music was the teacher band playing?
They covered Raining Blood by Slayer. Pretty
That's
wild.
kind of sick.
Yeah, like I said, like Navajos, like we Native Americans, we just love metal, man. And
What is it that Native Americans love about metal so much? Do you have any
I
idea?
don't know. It's just that, I guess, that rugged rowdiness, you know what I mean? That I put it like something about just like that. Aesthetics, I guess, is always kind of like, you know, drawn a lot of like people in, like my parents, you know, they're very like 80s metal thrash, you know what I mean? The jeans, like you see any old pictures of like Reservation High School, and you see the metal kids, man, they're just the aesthetics, man, they just look so cool. And it's just like to this day, you know, the kids still like love that stuff, you know what I mean? And their parents love it, you know what I mean?
Hell yeah.
Any of those bands ever like come through and play? Like any of these like sort of classic metal bands?
I know Testament came to the reservation. Korn came to the res.
Oh.
Yeah, we brought some pretty big bands. Megadeth recently came out. Like our promoters are growing up. The people like who are like, you know, going to all these concerts, they're getting really good. They're working their magic, and we got this really good one promoter. His name's Randall. Man, he brings some of the best acts. He brought up Misfits. He's like really tight with Tim Armstrong. He's brought out a bunch of good people, and he's done some pretty good things.
Sick.
So you played Via Sin Dios by Leftover Crack, not necessarily the most famous Leftover Crack song. Did you choose the song, or was it your girlfriend? I was just curious of the thought process behind the song.
I think it was her. She chose it because I was just like, if I want to do a song, if I'm going to do electric song, I want to do fucking Rock the 40 and Shoot the Kids at School. Like, let's do that. And she was like, I don't know, man. Like, let's do this when the lyrics aren't too harsh. You know what I mean? It's like, oh yeah, it's true. And then I was like, and I was like, well, you're singing it, so go for it. And it's a good thing I learned the lyrics along with her, because it's like, if not, we would have been like screwed.
Yeah. Why did you guys name the band Obama Eats Mutton?
Obama loves mutton. It was like, it was a joke, because like we're like trying to figure out a name, and I was just like, and it was that time when Obama was like really trying to like push his campaign, and he was pushing his campaign on the res, and we've seen it everywhere. I'm like, bro, he's gonna win, man. Like, he's a person of color, you know. It's like, of course, you know, I was gonna vote for him. I was like, you know what? Let's just call it Obama Loves Mutt. And it was as a joke. And then everyone's like, you know what? Let's just run it. You know, we got to give him a name in like a couple hours. I'm like, all right, let's run it, because we didn't have no plan B at all.
Yeah.
So we talked about the Crack Shack from Tuba City being kind of an older, back in the day venue. What were the venues that? The early venues when you were coming up
in Shiprock, or just around the res,
wherever you were playing your first shows.
Yeah, wherever you were playing, just the early ones. You know, the kind of the formative venues for you.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't really formative, like formal places, but like some of the early places, like a lot of the metal bands didn't really want us on their shows, and if they did, we played super early. So we're like, you know what? Let's just throw our own shows. So the place where we used to practice was at my friend's house. Is actually the guitarist, our first lead guitarist, the original guitarist for Low Cash. It was at his mom's house, and it was like this trailer, and then she had this like cool looking shack looking thing, and we would practice in there all summer and stuff like that, and we just ended up calling it the Dojo. Mm-hmm. Because we were Low Cash Ninjas. I'm like, okay, let's just call it the Dojo. And eventually we started bringing my friends over, and then pretty soon we're like, you know what? Let's just throw a show here. And then we start throwing shows. A lot of people came, and like, you know, we start to kind of see like, oh man, like people actually like us, you know. I'm like, we start to see, you know, a little bit more of like we're drawing more people. So I'm like, okay, let's see if we can, you know, reach out to other places. And then we start to see that there was other places like in Look At You Guy, which is where currently I'm living out of Shiprock, but there's this place called Look At You Guy, Arizona. There was this house venue. It was called Danny's Pad. And that was like in like this trailer middle of nowhere. And they had some really good shows there.
Wait, so Danny's Pad. When you say it was in the middle of nowhere, what do you mean? Like nothing was in sight of this trailer?
So it was like a trailer, like maybe within maybe a mile of everything. It was like a trailer, maybe 4 miles from the main road. And then there was like the next house was probably like two miles away. There was like lights you would see way out in the distance. You know what I mean?
Wow.
And it
okay.
was kind of like flat, kind of like barren little area, like, you know, a little bit of vegetation. Like just like weeds here and there, you know? And then in the far distance, you had like the cool mountain range of the Chuskas, and then the canyons that started going towards Round Rock. And then, yeah, so it was just like very kind of like Monument Valley looking, middle of nowhere, like, but very cool, you know what I mean? And it was just like, it's just kind of like one of the, like, I guess the high desert looking areas, which was really cool. And then like we pulled up to this venue. I'm like, bro, this is not it. And like my friend, she was like our kind of like our ambassador. She was like, no, trust me, this is it. I'm like, and then we saw all the vehicles in front of this trailer. I'm like, oh, I see. And there's like a bonfire, and the sun had already like was setting, and it looked all beautiful. I was like, man, I don't really come out to this part of the res, but this is sick. And then as we get to the house, we hear this band playing, and they're playing a cover of Tourette's by Nirvana. I'm like, bro, this song is sick. Let's. I didn't even break the gate. I just pushed the door open, walked in. I saw hella natives there, just like super like 2009 kind of like, you know, style everyone's wearing, you know, whatever. It's like the emo thing's big. And there's these like band. There's this really good band called Let the World Die. So good. They were really good. They're from Flagstaff, but they lived in Tuba City. They were killing it, and man, they were so good. And the drummer was actually, the drummer actually plays in some other bands, but they replaced the drummer, and they got one of Alex's drummer that was playing, but not that night. But it was such a good night, and it was just so crazy, man, to see that, like, what they had is what I was trying to build in Shiprock, you know what I mean? I was just like, man, this is beautiful.
So the show itself, could you describe the location of the trailer? Was it the living room, or what was it like? And how many people were they able to get into this space?
Okay, so from what I remember, the band was playing in the kitchen, and then everyone was standing in the living room, and the PA system was put on the counters in the kitchen, and yes. then all the stuff, like the tables and everything like that, were pushed off into one of the back rooms, and then all the couches and the TV was just pushed all the way up against the wall, and so there was all the standing space on the carpet, and then there was a, I remember a fan going, and then it wasn't even like, they didn't have any cool lights, it was just like a regular light like this. It was so hot, man. There's probably like, in that trailer was like a double wide. So there's probably like good, like 60 kids in that, like just in that area. And there's just hella people just hanging outside, just rotating. It would get too hot. People would come outside, more people would go in. You know what I mean? And it was just, yeah, just constant like rotation. You wouldn't see the same people in the pit the whole night, 'cause it was just like people, you know, getting tired, hanging out. Eventually I saw people coming and going. There's a lot of people leaving, you know what I mean? And all bus, but also more people coming to the show.
Yeah. Do people stage dive off the counter?
Oh, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, like
so sick.
I only could handle so much because I was like hanging out in there playing. Once we played, like I guess, like from what I heard, like this is on, like, you know, people are like, oh, once we played, people are like, oh my god, this was so sick, because they haven't heard ska in that area in a minute. So like they loved it. They were killing it. They were like loving, you know, they got all into it. And what this really good band that also played ska came up to us and they're like, hey, you should check out our band. And we started to kind of do research, and we found all these great bands that were kind of, you know, were networking basically. That was like my first, I guess, time networking to all these different bands, because our friend, his girlfriend, she's the one that brought us to that show. And then she connected me with two of the bands there. And then I connected with everyone else. And that's how I was able to just kind of like figure out the network of like punk rock and how people threw shows and stuff like that.
What was that band you connected with?
The first band was Fame, Fuck All My Enemies. They're based out of Tuba City as well. They're a really good band too. They
sick ass name.
What kind of ska did they play?
No, they weren't ska. They were like the hardcore band. Yeah. And then Let the World Die. And they were like, God, like they were like, they played very little ska, but it was like crusty, blackened death metal, but also like really crusty, and like the bass would go hard. But they eventually started playing ska, and their ska sounded so sick. I don't know if you know this band called Leopard, but they sounded kind of like,
yeah. Oh, cool.
Yeah, they were so sick. And it was like a couple, like a married couple that was the bassist and the guitarist. And their drummer was just like one of the best drummers in Blackstaff. And they would just kill it every time. But they were just like, yeah, we don't really like online presence. We're very just laid back. I'm like, man, you guys are so good. Like, that's what we wanted to, you know, like, you know, we wanted to be like on that level of just like with talent. You know what I mean? But yeah. Other bands we start to kind of that were not playing that night, there was this band called Distorted Victims. Really good band that was, you know, starting to kind of, you know, get their name out there. They were kind of falling apart, or they're coming called Small Town Boys, and they played a lot of punk rock, and they eventually started to break up, and they started this band called Distorted Victims, and they had the ska kind of sound that you know, that was that they were developing in that area, but they were pretty new at that time too.
Now, was there another venue called The Mod?
Yeah, The Mod. Yeah.
Now, tell us about The Mod.
So The Mod's a venue that I kind of like, you know, helped kind of like get going in Shiprock. Like it was like, it was called Modified Computers. It was basically like, cause it's like a whole like empty space, but there's like a little storefront, and this guy rented it, and he was like doing like modification to computers. He was like building PCs and stuff, kind of, you know, getting the community into like, you know, that type of stuff. And people would come by. It was, you know, it was like almost like an internet cafe. And I looked around in there. I was like, man, this is cool. What's going on back there? And he's like, oh, this used to be like a little old place called the Edge. It was like an old country western kind of style, like place where they threw country shows. And I was like, man, it's just empty in here. And I was like, I actually need a new venue. Are you cool if I throw a punk show here? And he's like, how much would you charge? He's like, I don't know. I'll count the money and we'll figure it out. And he's like, okay. And so I was like, I got like a little staff I can, you know, kind of, I'll just run down what it's going to look like. So I gave him like the rundown. It's like, okay, this is where people are going to come in to pay. People who need to use the restroom, we'll send them to the gas station. These guys are security. This person's a sound person. This is what we're going to do. And this is the set times. He's like, oh, very organized. Okay, cool. I don't think he was like, he probably thought like 20 kids would pull up. Like I legit brought like maybe like 50 people there. And then by the end of the night, it was like over 100 kids. And it was like just a regular local show. And he was like really overwhelmed. But then I paid him out and he was like, okay, we can do this. Like, okay.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah. And eventually he let go of the space. And then so I had to kind of go bypass him to get to the owner. And I eventually started talking to the owner, this guy named Virgil. And he was like, okay, yeah, I can throw shows in here. And then he was giving me really good deals on it. It's like, okay, cool. And then once he started to kind of see, like, you know, it was starting to get packed, he's like, okay, he started to up up the price. I'm like, whatever happens. And eventually, like venues, I think I moved away for a bit, and then they were still doing shows there. And then somehow, like, they stopped doing shows. Like, people just stopped going to shows. I remember for a while there was like no shows happening there. And that kind of sucked, you know what I mean? Because it was a really good scene. Like, we had some really good bands come out, like they played there. But eventually it started back up, but the name just stayed, and like everyone always wanted to change the name, but like that name, The Mod, just kind of sounds cool. And I was like, I don't know, it came from a computer guy, so let's just keep it. But now the daughter, she runs it, and she's doing a really good job running that space.
So,
doing shows still.
Yeah, she does shows, she does vending, she does like birthday events there. She does like, I don't know, she does a bunch of cool things, man. She's like a business person, so she's really doing a good job.
No more computers, though.
No, that computer thing lasted like maybe 2 months, and then it was done, and like the name stayed though.
Yeah, the legacy of the computer spot remains.
Yeah.
We'll be right back after this.
I want to talk about what's the vibe of these shows. It feels like there is kind of an unhinged quality to some of these shows. I mean, DIY punk, DIY ska, there is like that quality in general, but it feels like there might be a little bit more when it comes to these shows on the res.
Yeah, I definitely feel like shows in the res are way like more rowdier than like shows in the city and stuff like that. Like, I've been to shows in like New York, my friends are like, oh, the show's gonna crack, or like shows in backyards in LA. And I think the closest thing that kinda meets it is probably like a backyard show in LA, you know what I mean? It's very, but their vibe is very laid back, you know what I mean? It's very like, you know what I mean? Oh, cool. Like, if it's gonna pop off, it's gonna pop off, they'll fight and then they'll get over it, and you know what I mean? It's like real, like, okay, cool. Like, they got their own rules, you know what I mean? But on the res, it's like the scene is always changing, you know what I mean? Like, there'll be people who are doing like hardcore shows with the crowd killing, you know what I mean? And like that will start the show, and the next person who's playing is like a punk band or a ska band, and then it's like ska, you know what I mean? It's just like, you know what I mean? The music sets the tone for the night. So if it's like a hip hop show, then it's very like cool and laid back, you know what I mean? But if it's like a bunch of punk bands with one hip hop act, all the kids will go crazy for the hip hop act because they're like, okay, cool, this is a change of pace, you know? So it's really the music that sets the, tone. If it's like metal show, like, everyone's headbanging, by the end of the night, everyone, like, we're sweeping up all this hair that's like on the floor. There's like people usually, I feel like there's more fights that happen at the hip hop shows, the punk shows, the metal shows. It's like, you know what I mean? Everyone just kind of like, ah, oh, forget it. The hardcore shows, like, they got their own thing going, they let it go real quick, you know what I mean? Surprisingly, I thought there'd be more fights there, but yeah, it's usually the hip hop shows and the punk shows fights. And for me, I'm just like, I'll let it ride, and you know what I mean? Like, all right, take it outside. And then like, if it's definitely like gets bigger than it should be, then I'll like intervene. I'm like, all right, you guys are getting this way, I don't want to see people like, jumping people. If you're gonna fight, just fight over there, get it over, come back in, you know what I mean? And then it's like settled. And I'm like, I feel like at some point, and like I should have like I guess have rules, like take it off, take it elsewhere. But like at the end of the day, they're gonna do it, they're gonna get it over with. Might as well just let it happen, supervise it, and then clean them up, and then let them back in the show or get them an ambulance, you know, if they need to get stitched up.
I've been to some basement shows and stuff in just north, whatever, San Jose, California, whatever. And I feel like in a lot of cases, there's almost like an awkward energy. Like people are almost like scared to cut loose a little bit, or they kind of feel like self-conscious about it. But that doesn't seem necessarily that's the vibe at these shows, right?
Well, I feel like that with a lot of our non-native, fan base, like not fan base, but like I said, attendees. Like, whenever we throw a big show, like, a lot of like, the Villaganas, they'll come in, they'll just like, oh man, this is weird. Like, they don't know, like, the if it's their first time, they're just kind of like, oh, I don't know what to do. And like, usually their other like friend at Villagana, or like when I say Villagana, like white person, they're like, oh no, I've been to this, man, come over here, let's go say hi. And then everyone will like, oh, okay, who's like, we'll say hi to them and stuff like that. And then, they'll start to kind of like, oh, and then after like maybe like the second or third band, or like everyone's hanging out, they're having a good time, you know what I mean? But yeah, I see what you mean. Like, and especially if there's like natives who are coming from the city or have never been to a show, you know what I mean? Or like the younger crowd, they're very like timid. They're like, oh man, I don't know what to do. And they're hanging out awkwardly. And people usually, they're like, oh, hey, what's up? Oh, is your first time at a show? Okay, cool. Like, you should come check out this band, like, they're a little bit more welcoming, you know what I mean? And like, I feel like a lot of that kind of started, you know, with like, I guess, like, just trying to, like, you know, build up that scene. I would, you know, I would see more kids talking to other kids to kind of, you know, how would I say, get them more involved in the scene, let them feel less scared, you know what I mean? Stuff like that. And that's something I feel like I didn't have to, like, you know, demonstrate. You know, these people started doing it themselves. They're like, oh, hey, what's up? You know, like, they were very, like, open to having more people in the group. And I felt like in the beginning, you know, we were very like, oh man, it's like all these white people are show. Why do you think they're here? I don't know. Let's go ask them. You know what I mean? Like, it was weird. But now it's just like, oh yeah, more, like, you know what I mean? More people here. Cool. You know what I mean? And we want to bring more people from, like, you know, the, you know, the, we don't want to make it, you know, so exclusive. You know, we want to bring more people from, like, different places, you know what I mean? Especially to the mod, you know, the mod has a pretty good, like, reputation right now. So we're trying to build it up for, like, you know, just a good scene.
It seems also too, like, the spaces that these shows kind of happen. It seems like the willingness to allow shows to happen any and everywhere or wherever you can get your hands on a space is just completely, like, that's how it's done, which, you know, is also the case for punk rock. But, you know, it's not, you know, that usually entails a backyard or a barbecue, you know, or a basement. It doesn't mean, you know, a trailer in the middle of nowhere or a former computer shop, or, you know, it doesn't necessarily normally mean these types of spaces. Or Crack Shack, which was what? It was literally an abandoned house, right? With no power.
Yeah. They literally have to daisy chain electrical cords to get power out to that building. And then all the power is running off of one outlet. And so then the band starts playing and the light bulb hanging from the ceiling dims. It was sick.
So, like, creative, I guess you could say, creative in terms of, like, where can we do shows? Let's make it happen here.
Yeah, like, for a while we would do this, like, annual show that would be on the middle, on the mountain, like the, like when I was talking about that Danny's Pad in Lakachigai, there's the Cheska Mountains, and we would do this, like, show on the mountain, like, once every summer, and we bring out bands from, like, all over the place, and we would just set up generators, canopies, and we wouldn't start until the sun went down, though. You know what I mean? When it was, like, evening time, when everyone, because, like, we didn't want to start middle of the day. But for some reason, I don't know how, like, with the help of that local scene in Lagochigai, we were able to find a spot, and everyone just kind of knew where it was at. And we did a show, one show. And then from there, like, 2 years, I think, three years. It was just so many kids would come out, and they just knew exactly where to go. After that first time, the second time, a lot of people, third time, a lot of, and it was never like we charged people, it was always free. And it was just like people hanging out, some people camped out, and it was just really cool times, you know. And those were times when I was like really young, like not even 21, and just hosting these shows, you know what I mean? But like, I noticed that like a lot of these shows, like I didn't know, but there was also like kind of like, you know, just rowdy stuff happening. And as I started to kind of get older, I kind of, you know, would always try to check on like the people attending shows, because I always kind of felt like somewhat responsible. So like, as I started to get older, you know what I mean? Like I said, seeing like a new kid at a show, you know, like, oh, hey, what's up? My name's, you know, so-and-so. My name's Jordan. I'm hosting a show. Thanks for coming out, man. You know, there's a great band. I would just make him feel more included, but also just kind of keep my eye out for like, you know, really sketchy, like people, you know what I mean? Like, okay, if you're going to fight, yeah, that's cool. But if this person doesn't want to fight, leave them alone. You know what I mean? It's just like, just kind of trying to make it a little bit more of a safer space, because I, you know, I wish I, me going to shows as a kid, I wish I saw, you know, I had people doing that, you know, but everyone was so busy, you know, I didn't know anybody, you know what I mean? So yeah. Like, you know, I just kind of took these things I wish I had. I'm trying to do that now and just check on people before they leave shows. You know what I mean? Because, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, man, I threw this event, you know, I just want to make sure everyone gets home safe.
For sure.
So Low Cash Ninjas, this begins in like 2008, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me a little bit about the formation of the band and some of the influences. I mean, you're getting into, you had gotten into Leftover Crack and Choking Victim. I think that's some pretty significant early influences, right? You know, we did that talent show event you talked about, and then that kind of led to you starting this band, right?
After that, they we got asked to do a skate park show. Someone was a person in the community was hosting a skate competition, and they were like doing it at I think one of the plazas, and they asked us to play. And that show was kind of, you know, we didn't really have the drummer guy on board, so it wasn't the best show. But after, I was like, man, we really got to get this sound together. Like, you know, we just played like four cover songs. It's like, let's write music. So I remember just kind of trying to figure out who I was going to get to play in the band, you know. And a lot of the people, like, I guess I was starting to recruit, were like, it was our first time picking up, like, you know, instruments, you know, or they've only played like a little for like so long, you know. So Jacob was our drummer. He was kind of like, you know, one of the main guys that really helped me. Because I didn't know how to play drums at all. I barely had been playing guitar for like 2 years. And I was like, hey man, like I seen you play drums a little bit. Would you be down to play drums for us? He's like, yeah, for sure. And then the guy who let us practice at his house, Keanu, he was our lead guitarist. He was pretty good. And he was like, hey, I'll play guitar. I'm like, okay, cool. So we're just missing I was about to play bass, but we're looking for a bassist. And we had this friend that was always around. His name was Martin. And I was just like, hey, Martin, you're a pretty good metal guitarist. You know what I mean? Because I was like the least talented out of everybody. I was like, yo, you should play bass for us. He's like, okay, yeah, I'll give it a try. And then eventually our sound was just all over the place. Like it was like not on cue. It was just not on, like the tempo was off. But I was like, we got to push, you guys. We got to push. We can't give up. We can't give up. Come on. I know it's the rhythm guitarist. I was just like, I would listen in and then like trying to figure it out. Like, you know, where do we got to tighten up at? And I had no idea how to run a band. And so eventually we started to kind of get those covers down. We got a bunch of like, we started learning some like, I don't know if Stupid Henchman. That's one of the bands that just changed my life. Them and like No Cash. And I was like, kind of, I feel like I was outgrowing, you know, like Leftover Crack. Or no. Like Choking Victim and Left to Crack. And I was like, man, there's other bands out there. And then so we start to kind of like, you know, mimic that sound. But also after a while, I was like, man, let's just do our own thing. So we start to kind of, you know, try your own type of music. It was very slow ska, like very awful. And then we graduated high school. And then we started playing our own house shows and stuff like that. We took a lot of influence from like, you know, the Stupid Henchmen, Mad Conductor, which was a really good band, No Cash. Those are bands. And then we, like, I guess like our lyrics, you know, that a lot of that came from just kind of like, you know, growing up on the res, because you know, there was like nothing else to like really relate to, you know what I mean, when it came to other people like playing, other punk bands were playing songs about how would I put it, like I guess just like awful parents. But it's like, yo, we had some pretty good parents, you know what I mean? It's like in our culture, like, are, of course, like we're broke, like, you know, like we, a lot of the Navajo Nation is living underneath the poverty line, but like our parents, you know, might not have the most money, but they were pretty good parents to us, you know what I mean? Like they, yeah, you know, they made sure we got me, you know, we were fed every day. You know, my mom's a single mom and she, you know, did her best, you know what I mean? And like our friends, you know, like my friends, that fat, like, man, like, you know, their parents were like really holding it down. So I'm like, we can't sing about parents, you know what I mean? Like, what can we sing about? I was like, of course we can sing about, you know what I mean, or history, you know what I mean? That's like the most obvious thing and cliche to do, is like, you know what I mean? But what I realized though is that like not a lot of bands are doing that. Not a lot of bands were singing about, like, you know, I, at least I thought so, you know what I mean, we're singing about like, you know, the treatment of Native Americans. Like, man, this is actually something I guess we can, you know, start to kind of, you know, work around, you know. And that's when I realized that other bands around the res were doing the same thing. I'm like, oh, this is so sick. And it made me like, you know, more motivated, you know, other bands on the res doing these types of shows and stuff, and just personal experiences kind of, you know, growing up as a kid. And that's what we kind of got into.
What's an early song that you can recall writing, you know, about your experience as a native, that you really felt proud of, like that you really felt like you expressed something important?
We had this song called, it was really like one of our really heavy songs called Wagon Burner. And that song's basically about, you know, going to the border towns. Cause as a kid, we live on the reservation most of our lives, right? But the border town is where we face a lot of like, you know, police violence, you know, and like racism and stuff like that. So anytime we would leave the res, it is very like, you know, hostile to us, you know, cause it's like, you know, like out there, you know, it's their rules, you know what I mean? Cause on the res, you know, it's, you know, we feel comfortable, we feel love. But once we cross that, like, you know, that imaginary line, like, you know, all that leaves, you know? So it's like, you know, in order to, you know, keep up with that type of life, you know, we have to kind of, you know, toughen up. And of course, you know, be on the res, we're tough kids, you know what I mean? But out there, you know what I mean, it's like that type of toughness doesn't really fly, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, we're looked at as being rowdy kids, but it's like, you know, in some sense, like that plays to our advantage, you know what I mean? Because it's like, hey, we're rowdy kids, you know what I mean? But, you know, we just got to be careful, you know what I mean? So that's the whole thing, is like we got to be smarter, you know what I mean? So being out there, like, you know, this like built up this aggression. It's like, man, I hate having to like, you know, tiptoe. I hate having to like walk with my head down in these places. I was like, you know, like I can't live like this, you know, like if it were up to me, I'd burn these places down. Like a lot of our economy, you know, our money we make on the reservation goes into these border towns, and we give them all our money and they profit off everything. You know what I mean? So I'm like, yo, fuck this, burn it down, you know, wagon burner. Cause like, you know, my eyes, you know, when the colonizers came across, they were, you know what I mean, and, you know, invading our lands. And what do, you know, a lot of Native American tribes do? They will go, and there's a symbol of like a wagon, you know, on fire. You know what I mean? For us, that wagon on fire was like the border towns on fire, because it's like, at the end of the day, that's not where I want my money going. You know, I want my money going back to my people. So we start to kind of think, like, you know what, let's stop spending money out here and just put more back money back into our economy. And that was basically like our mindset of, like, you know, writing one of those songs. That was like one of more aggressive songs, you know what I mean? Yeah, because it's just, and yeah, that's basically what it talks about. It's like a little bit of like just personal aggression that we all kind of like shared. And like, you know, like no one else will know what this, like, you know, feels like outside of, you know, the Navajo Nation, or outside of, true, I guess, being Native American, you know what I mean? So it's like, you know, we might as well sing about it and express it.
Yeah, other people in this country don't understand what it's like to have a border town within their own country.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, that kind of, that is something that's a unique experience.
Yeah.
So you your first record, Fuck Yo Team, right? That was your first album, 2013?
It dropped 2009.
Oh, okay.
But we put it on streaming or uploaded to the internet 2013.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. What do you remember about the recording of this record?
We recorded this while we were still in high school. We recorded it at a studio. I was part of this like gifted and talented like group in the high school. And we were able to like, I guess they took us to different field trips. And one of them was like a recording studio. And then one of the teachers was like, we, you know, record. I'm like, I know nothing about this, but I'll give it a try. And it was like a really good recording studio in Colorado. And it was just like maybe 2 hours away from the school, or like 2.5 maybe. And we recorded one song there. And the guy's like, man, this is pretty good. I'll give you guys a really good deal if you guys want to come back. And I was like, okay, now it's just me and one of the other guys. I'm like, okay, if I come back, I'll come back with a full band. He's like, okay. And I remember we had to like pawn a lot of stuff. And I don't know if you know what pawning is. Like you got
to. Yeah, yeah. What'd you have to pawn?
Well, we pawned like some jewelry. We pawned like Pendleton blankets, you know, the typical Native stuff. We pawned all that, and our family helped us because our families were broke too. We pawned a lot of our stuff just to kind of get that money together. And then we went, and then we got to the studio. We recorded everything in one take live. The guy was in a bad mood. I'm like, oh my God. This guy. I was like, all right, let's just run it. We did everything one take. All that's recorded in one take, like live, like no temp, no metronome or nothing. After that, he gave us a good deal. I was like, okay, cool. And so I was like, nice, man. Like, we got this. He'll give it to us. And it wasn't even mastered. And I was like, you know, we can't even afford to get it mastered. Let's just run it. He's like, okay, cool. Cool punk album. Let's run it. I was like, all right, cool. And then, yeah. So a lot of those, like, the whole thing, we didn't even get a second try on it. We, like, legit finished that. And, like, I think the setup and everything, like, 3 hours. Setting up, recording. I remember he gave us the finished product. And I'm like, me thinking like back then, I was like, oh my God, this is so sick. This sounds so great. We're so hyped. We recorded so many like burnt CDs. We're burning so many CDs. We were like spray painting t-shirts, making merch. We did this like unofficial, like, I guess, album drop at the dojo. And I remember like so many kids out. I remember like so many of my friends from the high school came out, 'cause I was like hyping it up so much. And we sold so much like of our stuff. Like we sold everything, that we're able to get everything we made, like I guess all the stuff we pawned, our family pawned, to get all that back out and then make a profit.
Oh, hell yeah.
It's like, oh, we got all our stuff back, and it was so sick, and we were just all excited. Like, man, but like, I guess this is how it works, funding an album, you know what I mean? It was so funny. And then after a while, like that CD only existed, that thing only existed on CD for the longest time until we finally uploaded it to MySpace. And yeah, it was just like, everyone's like, oh, you got that CD? Oh, it was like hard. Like, I remember burning copies just to sell it to get gas money at certain points, because people were wanting it so bad. You know what I mean?
So now I'm curious your take on the role of punk rock, these shows, in terms of the community and building community and creating positivity within the community.
Okay, so definitely with like, I guess, being a... I guess a person in the community hosting these events, it's definitely got me more into like the, I guess, exposed to like, I don't want to call it activism, but I, you know, it's like putting in work for us. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, protecting the environment, protecting the people, you know what I mean? It's always kind of been like within our teachings and Navajo culture, but also like now that it's become, you know, more, I guess, attacked, you know, recently, you know what I mean? It's like all our resources, natural resources, are constantly, you know, being, you know, violated, and like a lot of our people, you know, are like, you know, being taken advantage, you know. So it's like being a person in the community, you know, it's hard to be positive, you know, I'm not a person to really go out and rant, you know, and stuff like that. You know, I like to do it through music and stuff, but if I'm able to like host like events, you know, like benefit shows, or if I'm able to host a show and let people do their vending, their info shop, their zines, you know, I feel like that's my way of, you know, helping. And I guess some sense, I feel like my music, I'm able to educate, but I guess being a performer led me to this job I have now of being a teacher. Is kind of like being a performer too as well. And I'm also like, I'm teaching English, but I'm also like able to like teach these kids, you know, a little bit of like, you know, history, a little bit of like, you know, I guess just anything happening in the world, letting them kind of open up their minds, starting to let them think for themselves. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like, I look at it as like, when I go on tour, I'm playing like 14 shows back to back. But when I go to work every day, I'm playing 4 shows every day, and it's like teaching the content, and it's every I guess classroom is like a different crowd, and I just got to read it and just get them hyped up. And you know, once they learn, once they're happy, once they're laughing, once they're walking out with new knowledge, that's when I know I had a good crowd, you know.
So when you say that the shows kind of led to this, do you mean that the shows kind of gave you a context of how to engage with the world, and that you took that to other things like engaging with the needs of your community and how to like organize and stuff?
Yeah, for sure. Cause there's definitely a need for like positive male role models in our community. And somehow I fell into like, you know, we would be like, I remember being part of this group of kids a long time ago, back in like maybe 2012, I took a break from the band. We were called Nehika Bena, which is our journey for existence. And we walked to all 4 sacred mountains on foot. So we basically walked the whole border of the Navajo Nation on foot. We would start every solstice, every equinox, walk for like 2 months to 3 months, and then stop for a month or a couple of weeks and then start back up with the next one. And it was basically going to each mountain, because each mountain in our culture represents a leader. And we're going to each mountain to kind of, you know, seek guidance, to give, you know, respect, to give offerings, to kind of look for that guidance. And along the way, we would travel to each community and we'd be educating them about what we've learned. You know, we'd be learning about their community, but it's all within our, you know, same, you know, reservation. And so being there, I was able to do these teachings with these different groups of kids. And I was just like, man, this is pretty cool. Maybe I'll try being a teacher. And so after the walk ended, I went into college. I started, you know, my associates, finished that, got my bachelor's. And then I started teaching. And then I didn't think I was going to be super good at it, but I thought I'd give it a try. It was like super easy. I don't know how I was able to make it work, but since this day, it's just been super easy teaching.
So there's, I read a thing where I think it was you talking about this idea that there's a Res Hits, and that you brought up the song Out in the Cold by Distorted Youth.
Oh, the band was called Child Left Behind.
Oh, Child Left Behind.
Yeah, they were the big band back in like the early 2000s. They had this Res hit called Out in the Cold. It was a really good song.
When you say Res Hit, you just mean everyone in the communities knows this song.
Yeah. So like you go to like, I remember back then there was the MP3 players, and then you go to like any song or let anyone play a song. There was always like the reservation songs that were all in constant like repeat. And it was always like, this was before streaming. It was like that song. They had a song, Distorted Victims. They had one. The Blissons, they had one. Downplay had one. It was just these songs that were constantly, it was like everyone's favorite, you know. And then when you went to the shows, everyone wanted that song, you know what I mean? It was always like, it was either the first song in their set list or the last song on their set list.
Yeah,
and everyone knew it, you know what I mean?
Nice.
And then how was that getting distributed? Was that just like through file sharing or burning CDs?
Yeah, file sharing, you would just go to a friend's house, like, hey, yo, let me jump on your computer, get some songs. Like, okay, bet. And then, yeah, you would get like music on there. Like, because we couldn't really afford iPods. So we would just like, you know, put our little MP3 thing in there, get our songs, and then dip out.
Wait, what were these MP3 players?
Oh, man, I don't know. It was like just
like some like weird off-brand thing?
Yeah, the off-brand generic one, the one that looked like a thumb drive. And you
just put your headphone in there. That's sick.
Yeah, it could probably hold like maybe 120 songs, but you know, those are all the good songs.
Yeah. Do you still have one of those?
No, definitely not. Wish I did.
Not in like a drawer or something?
No, I threw a lot of things away when I went to college. I wish I kept that.
In Defense of Ska will return in a moment.
So I want to ask about, there's two booking stories I want to hear, bands that you booked. First one, Star Fucking Hipsters. There's a story, I believe, where you booked them and you had to move the venues and things went a little haywire. Mm-hmm. Can I hear that story?
Yeah, for sure. So we booked Star Fucking Hipsters. It was supposed to be at the dojo. It was like, you know, it was sick. Everyone, it was like, I think, I don't know how many... It was quite a bit of people, though. I remember it was like over 100 and something people. Tickets were sold. It was looking good. And then, like you said, whenever the fights break out, we're like, all right, go take it to the street. You know what I mean? Get it over with. But apparently, they took it all the way to the Burger King because the show was at a house behind Burger King. They went out to Burger King. They caused the whole traffic thing. And then what I heard was like, yo, someone got hit with a car. I'm like, cops are on their way. And I was so pissed, bro. But that's not what happened. It's just like, oh, the guy got beat up and then he got taken home. That's apparently what happened. I don't know, but you know how everyone's panicking and they're like, oh yeah, someone got hit with the car, blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh my God, someone died. Oh my God. They're going to shut down the show. And Molotov Compromise just got done playing. And then Murder Majesty was getting ready to go up. And then I was like, all right. And I had to fucking break the news. I'm like, nah, fuck this. I'm like, nah, we can't fucking shut this shit down. I was like, Murder Majesty is going to play and we're going to move this show. And I hit up my homie AJ, and his family had this little piece of land 10 miles away. It was like this other venue that was starting up called The Altar. And then I was like, yo, can we throw a show at The Altar? And he's like, for real? He's like, yeah, bro. Like, our show just fell, is about to fucking get shut down by the cops. He's like, how many people do you think? He's like, I don't know. I'm guessing if we can convoy this, like 120 at the very least. There might be more. He's like, fuck it. Let's go. I was like, all right. Get everything ready. He said he started setting up a sound while Murder Majesty was playing. I told Star Fucking Hipsters, were like, we don't care because they were super faded by then, you know, or drugged up. We don't care. We'll follow you. And they're in like this like truck that has like these bullhorns in the front. It's like a red truck. And I thought they'd be in the van, but I guess they were touring with Murder Majesty and they had the van. So my vehicle's in the front. I think I was borrowing my mom's car. And then they were behind me. The bands were behind me. We started to line everybody up and we got everyone out of there. Man, that thing was so long. That convoy was probably as long as the parade. I don't know that we ever
were. Oh my God.
We took that. And pretty soon, like people that weren't even like, that didn't even pay to the show, they start following. And
they're like, where's everyone going?
Yeah. And so we pulled off the road and it goes down this little like hill into this like little farm acre. It was like 3 acres of farm. And it just looked like a little fucking like farm. Like, you know how people throw shows on a farm? Yeah, everyone parked at the altar. They were just parking in random spots. They had this nice stage. And the guy, he fucking, I don't know what he was thinking, but he had 2 fire pits going on each side of the stage because he couldn't find his lights. So I'm like, all right, we're doing it with the fire pits on each side of the stage. And man, I swear, like, I thought that crowd was big, but this crowd was way bigger. Like, it was just, and I was like looking around. I'm like, did you pay? And I was like, I'm not even going to ask. Like, these guys got their money. Let it be a free show. And then word got around, it was a free show. It took like Star Fucking Hipsters an hour to get ready to start setting up everything because they were taking their time. By then the crowd was in full effect. It was huge and everyone was having a fun. I was just like, man, this is one of the best shows I've at that time. I thought I threw. I was like, okay. And then Star Fucking Hipster started playing. And I think Stizza was supposed to play guitar, but he's like, no, I'm not going to play guitar. I'm too drunk. So he just started singing. And then, man, it was just like, they played all the hits. They played like, they said they were going to play for 30 minutes, but they didn't play for like an hour because no one was going to leave. You know what I mean? They kept shouting one more song and it was a sick show. And finally they're like, all right, we're done. We're fucking done. And they shut the show down. Everyone started to slowly disperse. And I was just like, man, then I was just like, this is crazy. I can't believe we moved the whole punk show. And like,
yeah.
And did the cops actually show up and shut down the other show?
I don't even know, man. Like, I went back to the house. Like, I went back to the house like a week later. I'm like, yo, so that person died? They're like, oh no, did the cops come? No, but we had to clean up after you guys. I'm like, fuck. And I felt bad because usually I clean up after the show. But I was a little upset that they made me move it. But I was like, whatever, you know, we just want the show to, you know what I mean, to happen.
Yeah.
All right. Another show that you booked that I thought was pretty interesting was you had Mac DeMarco come through. You booked this show.
I didn't do the signing. I didn't do that. I just kind of like, you know, let's just say I promoted it. You know what I mean? Like, I knew about it for a good minute. Like, I helped set it up. You know what I mean? I got the contact for the promoter. So I got the, yeah. So it was the one of my friends, remember the guy I was telling about, Randall?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was like, hey, my friend Manuelito wants to talk with you. You got any time to talk at some point? I was like, who is he? And he's like, oh, he's the Navajo Nation Museum curator. I'm like, oh, that sounds real big. Okay, yeah, go for it. And I'm like, all right. So he was like, hey, Jordan, how's it going? Blah, blah, blah. I'm thinking about doing a show with this pretty big, well-known act. I'm just trying to look for a venue. And I was like, why don't you have it at the museum? He's like, well, the thing is, he's coming out during the Shiprock Fair, and you always throw a big show during the Shiprock Fair. I was wondering if you could help me set up the show in Shiprock. I'm like, what day is it? And he's like, it's a Thursday. I'm like, damn, a Thursday is rough, man. Like, that's when the fair is big. Because, like, the Navajo Nation Fair is really huge. It's like, you get, like, a town with 10,000 people, and you throw 40,000 more people in that town and make it huge as fuck. You know what I mean? So yeah. That's the Navajo Nation, or Northern Navajo Nation Fair. So, all right, well, how many people? What's the capacity? He gave me the numbers. I'm like, okay. So I looked at the mod. I'm like, this is not going to happen at the mod. The mod is way too small. And I was like, this guy really thinks he can sell the mod? I was like, okay, let me try the chapter house. And I rarely go to the chapter house. And the chapter house was like, yeah, we can work with these numbers. We'll give you a price. And he gave me a quote. And I was like, okay. And I took it to the guy. And he's like, yeah, done. Go give me the paperwork and we'll sign it. I was like, okay. I was like, wait. Before we do this, you got to tell me who the guy is. And he's like, or who's the band? He's like, it's Mac DeMarco. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? All right. Let's do this shit. Let's make it happen. I don't believe you, but let's make this show happen. He's like, okay, cool. And he's like, but the thing is, I want your band to play. I'm like, dude, that is we're going to be the wild card. Who do you got all the money? He's like, I got this all-star lineup. He named off all these like indie bands from the res, yeah. And we were the fucking wildcore band. I was just like, ah, oh, damn, you got all these nice indie, cool, like electronic atmospheric sounding band, and you got fucking ska punk, like crusty ska punk.
Yeah.
And I was like, bro, you know these bands are going to throw a big fit. These bands that you named off, these locals, they should be playing right before him, and you want me to play right before Mac DeMarco? He was like, yeah, this is your city, man. You help me. I was like, ah, dude, they're going to be so mad at me. Like, I feel like they deserve it more. And like, you know, he's like, Jordan, it's your city. You do it. Let's make it happen. I'm like, then he told us how much he was going to pay us. I'm like, all right, let's do it. We'll do it. So I was like, all right, cool. So we did the show. And then sure enough, like once we announced, he's like, don't announce that. I won't say anything. And I was in college at the time. I was trying my best not to say anything. But one of my friends, he's the biggest Mac DeMarco fan. And I was like, hey, man, what would you do if Mac DeMarco played the Reds? He's like, first of all, that would never happen. But if they did, I would lose my mind. I was like, okay, cool. And he didn't say anything. He's like, okay, cool. And I was like, man, I really want to tell people. I was like, I can't. So I think like maybe 2 weeks later, he gave me the flyer. And he's like, don't announce it. We're going to wait another week. I'm like, dude, you're just giving me crumbs. And finally announced it. And everyone just went crazy. Everyone thought it was like a hoax. They're like, this is not happening. This is, I was like, bro, this is for real. And like, they're like, they didn't believe him at first, but once they saw my name kind of attached to a lot of the promotional stuff, they're like, okay, if Jordan's helping with this shit is definitely going down. Cause I've never let the crowd down. Like anytime I set a band's coming out, like, you know, they're like, all right, if Jordan's name's on there, it's definitely happening. There were people, I got so many messages that day about the show. And I was just like, I'm just trying my best, you know, just to make this happen. Just buy a ticket. It's going to sell. It's sold out in like 3 days. Like all those tickets went. And it was so funny. That day the show happened. He's like, oh yeah, here's your passes. I'm like, passes. Yeah. You get 6 passes for your friends. I'm like, all my friends already paid to this show, man. I was like, and I'm like, oh. And then it was so funny. There's all these like kids. They came from out of town and they're just sitting in the parking lot. Like, is Mac DeMarco really playing? I was like, yeah, man, it's pretty unfortunate. Did you guys, or no, I was like, it's pretty cool, right? He's like, we don't got tickets. I'm like, oh, that's so unfortunate. How much would y'all pay for tickets? And then they're like, we paid this. I'm not going to say how much. I was like, all right, I shouldn't be doing this, but you know what, dude? Like, all my friends already bought tickets. I'll help you guys out. And then, yeah, so I helped them get into the show and it was a really good night. And it was funny too, after the show happened, oh, I remember there's like a barrier too. And like a lot of the bands were really chill and quiet. Then we hit the stage, the crowd just rotated. All like the cool, like, I guess shoegaze kind of style people, you know, like hipster Navajo kids were all in the front. They just kind of got pushed aside by all like our fan base and our fan base. You can see like a wave of black just came in, all black shirts, like fire metal shirts. And man, the crowd just erupted. They had like this little barrier that was like made by like a carpenter with like 2x4s. It was just,
oh no.
Yeah. And we were on the stage and it was just going crazy and people were crowd surfing. I was like, all right, sick. And then I just like, I don't know. I just went, whenever I'm in show mode, I just go in and I interact with the crowd and I just get into it. And I didn't realize I'm standing on that little like thing, like on the crowd holding my mic. You know what I mean? At that point, I'm just like wilding with the crowd and Like it was such a good night. And after we got the stage, that whole thing was about to fall apart. And then Mac DeMarco comes up. He's like, "Man, you guys are amazing." And I was like, "What?" In the way Mac DeMarco was like giving us props. And I was like, I thought it was just kind of like, oh, he's just kind of saying hi. You know what I mean? Just he, I think he felt like he needed to say that. But then after the venue, he was hanging out. He was like really leaning on my blazer, and he was like signing autographs, and he was talking to me the whole time. And then he was signing autographs and kept talking. And then his band came up talking to my band. I was like, "Man, they actually did like us. That's pretty cool." And then they were like, "Oh yeah, do you guys want some free merch?" And they gave us all this shit. I was like, "Yeah." And I had like a, he gave me like, he's like, "Get whatever you want." I was like, and I came back with like six vinyls. I'm like, "I know this is bad, but this is not all for me. So my friends, can you sign these?" Like, "For sure. Just tell me the names." And he's signing it off all to my friends. And I didn't even think to get one for myself, but I was like, about all my friends. I was just like, yeah, it was a good night. And then so many kids were excited. And it was just like, it was a memorable night. Cause it was like, it was like bringing all these different genres we had. Cause our like crowd was like, you know, very punk rock. They had all the indie kids. They had all like the hipster kids, just random, you know, people just all showing up. And it was just like a mixture, and everyone was having a good time that night, which was pretty cool.
That speaks a lot to your character too, that you got vinyl for all your friends and forgot to get one for yourself.
Oh yeah. That's sick. I know. I was just like, boom, 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 boom. And afterwards I was just like chilling after that. Oh, I know. I didn't think about it until like maybe I got back home and I was like, "Man, I should get a vinyl for myself." I was like, I would have felt bad asking for a 7 vinyls. Like, nah, that's yeah.
Yeah.
So do you know, are you familiar with the band Hans Gruber and the Diehards?
Yeah. I haven't seen them play yet. I've briefly met one of the members a couple times. Yeah.
They're based out of Austin, but the sax player, Rosie, she's from Vanderwagen.
Mm-hmm.
So she's from the Res.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but this is Zuni Reservation, right?
It's Zuni Reservation, but the Navajo Nation's just right there, right? It's very, it's, you know, all kind of all like, where's Vanderwagen? Right here's like that border, you know, and it kind of separates it. You know?
Yeah. So this whole area, we're kind of talking about this whole area. Is this, do you guys kind of see this as a one, like just like one major area, or does it feel like different areas to you?
I guess the vibes are very different.
Mm.
When you go into Hopi, you can tell it's very, you know, like they look at me and they're like, "Oh, this guy's definitely not Hopi." You know, like they treat me a little bit different. You know what I mean? If I go to like, you know, Zuni, it's just kind of, you know, they're like, "Oh, he's Navajo." You know what I mean? And so it's like, there's this whole thing, I guess, like we try not to do. It's like, you know, like, cause there's like always like historically our tribes, you know, would always go, you know, war parties with one another. You know, sometimes we didn't get along, and there's this like Hopi land dispute, you know, because Hopi lands within Navajo Nation. There's like this like ongoing beef with like Navajo and Hopis, you know what I mean? And we're trying to like resolve it. We don't want to be about it, but some of the elders, they want to keep that beef going, you know? But like when you go to these different places, things are changing, you know? Like, I feel like when you go onto like Apache land, you know, there's like, you know, very like hunter vibe there. You know what I mean? You can see a lot of people in camo, you know, like, you know, you got the trucks that are built for hunting. You know what I mean? You mm-hmm. go into Dooney, you know, a lot of people are very into like, you know, silversmithing and stuff like that. We got pretty good silversmiths, but they got some really good ones too out there. You know what I mean? And, you know, it's just different vibes, I feel like, but it's still at the end of the day, you know, it's like, I feel better there than anywhere else. You know, I'd rather be there than like, you know, on actual, you know, United States soil. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. So your next record is Broke, Brown and Beautiful. Your next record.
Yeah. That's the next one after, Fuck You Team.
What, nice on Bandcamp. It says 2017. Is that when it was released?
Yeah. 2017.
Okay. Yeah. Can you speak a little bit on the recording of this, but also the title, what kind of inspired the title of this record?
Okay. So, Fuck Your Team was kind of like, just like your, I guess our high school theme, you know, like, you know, theme song, you know, everything we were going through in high school, but like Broke, Brown and Beautiful was everything kind of like just leading up to like where we were in life. I just got done, you know, doing that walk across the Navajo Nation, been through several different, like, you know, actions and stuff like that. Standing Rock was happening, is in full effect, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Trump was like, oh, you know, he was becoming a president at the time. So it's like, man, like, we got to put something together to just kind of reflect what we're going through right now. There's all these songs we've been playing for a while. We just never had the time to record them. So I'm like, you know, let's just record it. So we started recording. Those were not all recorded in the same studio. A lot of those were home studios from different places. And Alex recorded a couple of those songs for us too. And it was like, that one was done with just basically our friends helping us. We didn't pay for that one. Our friends were like, hey, we got you. We'll do this one for you. And we recorded one in a studio in Flax. So we kind of just pieced together that one. Just like, we have to, like, because I thought the band was going to break up, which eventually did. But we're just kind of, let's put these songs out before, you know, we get too old. And before, back then I was getting old. I thought I was getting old, but no. I was like, yeah, let's put these out before we go off and do other stuff in our lives.
How old were you when you had this thought that you were old?
Oh my gosh, well, like 20. I think I was like 25.
Old. So old.
No, that was my mindset. I was like,
God. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, now I think I'm getting older. I'm just like, man, nah, I don't know why what I was thinking back then. But anyways, so we were trying to put all that stuff together. You know, it was some of the songs were like kind of like songs that, you know, we felt like we started to mature. We wrote about, you know, songs about a simulation. We wrote songs about, you know, I guess relationships, you know, we wrote songs about revolution. We wrote songs, you know, about racism, border town violence, you know what I mean? Just, you know, some about identity too. You know what I mean? About who we are, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's hard to like, you know, have an identity, you know, with where we're at in life and stuff like that. So a lot of that was just kind of like, let's put it all up into this, you know, album. How are we going to sum it up? It's like, of course, you know, well, poverty is, you know, a big thing, you know, being brown, our identity, you know what I mean? But and all this, like, you know, like, I guess being someone who's brown, we don't look at ourselves, you know, we didn't want to be, you know, Native American when we were kids, you know what I mean? We're like, man, this sucks, man. We're like, we're broke, you know what I mean? People don't like us, you know what I mean? We're just, we see ourselves on the television. We're constantly being killed all the time. We're like the bad person. But it's like, you know, we got to find some beauty in all the stuff that, you know, that we've grown up, and we start to kind of appreciate life a little bit more, and we start to appreciate our culture and where we come from and our language, you know, and finally our identity. I'm like, you know, I'm glad I grew up broke because I appreciate everything I have now. I'm glad I like grew up brown. You know, I have this identity, you know what I mean? I have this culture, I have this language, you know, and it's all beautiful to me. So we're just like, you know, let's just call it that. Broke, brown, and beautiful. And so it stuck with that. All right, that stuck with us.
Nice. So I want to kind of close by talking about sort of you're looking at the kids, the people that come and see you play, and kind of what you're hoping that they got from it. And I saw a quote that you gave in an interview, and I want to just read that to you and kind of have you talk about it. So you said, we always give homage to Black people because they created the music. We play punk rock, reggae, and ska, all that comes from Black people. White people think that they have ruled the industry, and that creates a lot of white supremacy embedded in the music. We tell kids people of color can do it. And if we can do it, the kids at home can grab the guitar and do it.
So growing up, music, I guess I never really got to see music history, you know what I mean? I've always, you know, it was very dominated by, like, you know, a lot of, you know, anytime we turn on the TV, you know, it was Kurt Cobain, it was Amy Winehouse, you know what I mean? People, you know, I didn't see a lot of representation, you know? And it makes me sad because, you know, back in the 70s, there was a lot of, like, you know, Native Americans doing the Native American rock, you know what I mean? Like Exit, they were doing all this really cool political stuff, but it's very undermined because the industry is very like, you know, hey, you can't be singing about, you know, burning flags. You can't be singing about killing white people. We're not going to put it out there. And it makes me bum. You know, I was like, man, like, I didn't learn about this stuff till later on in life. Like, you know, there was this whole representation. It's always been there. And it's like, you know, it's kind of like, you know, very whitewashed what we see on like even just like the modern day punk rock circuit. You know, you see all these like super white bands that are singing, you know, about all these problems, there are all these bad things, but they're not giving that spotlight to the people who are actually, you know, experiencing it. And it, you know, bums me out. And I'm just like, man, like at the end of the day, it's just like, I wish I saw someone like that. You know, I wish I saw, you know, someone brown, someone at the very least brown, but if someone, you know, Native American, Navajo out there doing this, you know what I mean? That representation would mean so much to me, you know? But as I got older, I started to see it a little bit more. And now I'm starting to see it in television. You know, we got all these TV shows coming out. We're starting to see more representation in movies, you know, and especially music. I'm starting to see all these great bands, not only in punk rock, but like metal, you know what I mean? And hip hop, like even, some of them are even my friends, and they're doing all these great things. And all that stuff is just like, you know, kind of makes me reflect and think like, man, like it's just always been like very like undermined at the beginning, but I'm glad to have lived through it now to kind of see all that change, you know what I mean? And for me, it's just like, I always think back to it. So I was like, you know, all this music we love, you know, comes from, you know, Black people, because it's like they created rock and roll, you know what I mean? They created, you know, ska, they created reggae, you know, all these different things that I like, you know, and that's why I always just, you know what I mean? Like, it's just the respect's always been there, you know?
Thank you for listening to In Defense of Ska. To support the show, sign up for our Patreon. Intro and outro music by Slow Gherkin from the EP Lives. Additional music by Dan P. and the Bricks. Please rate and review the podcast and tell a friend. Follow at In Defense of Ska on social media. The book In Defense of Ska by Aaron Carnes is available from Clash Books. Order it online. Chris Reeves of SPI is our editor. This is your co-host, Adam Davis of Omnigon, leaving you by saying ska now more than ever. Ooh, yeah. Another episode in the can. Thanks for joining us.
That was, what was the episode? Was that, episode 6,000, maybe?
Oh, God. Who knows at this point? Hey, but if you want to help us get to episode 6,000, there's only one way to get there.
Yes.
And that, dear listener, is our Patreon. That's right. Your $5 will go towards pushing us into the stratosphere towards that 6,000th episode. Listen, if we could just podcast all the time, if we could just rely on listeners to support this podcast, think about what we could do.
We might actually start defending ska.
Oh, we already do that.
On that note, maybe we should throw in a ska now more than ever to go out, because I don't think we've done that in a while.
Oh, you just did. Bye.
No. Do a ska now more than ever.
You just did it.
No. Do it. It needs to come from you. You're the
leaving.
You're the person that does it good.
That's not me.
Do it, please.
It's not me.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.